Well, I'm very pleased to welcome Professor Martin Drum back to you from the Roundhouse. Welcome, Martin.
Great to be here, Michael, as always.
It's one of those days around the world, really, of mourning. We've all woken up here in Australia to learn that Queen Elizabeth II, monarch of the United Kingdom and many other nations, including Australia, has passed away, and King Charles III is now on the throne. What an amazing reign she's had, 70-odd years. No doubt you and other political scientists will be able to tell me instantly how many English, Wales and Scottish and Northern Irish prime ministers she's had, including welcoming Liz Truss, the latest Prime Minister of the UK, to her job just a couple of days ago. What amazing coincidences. And just while I'm making the introduction, Martin, you start to see in the media already, people reflecting, 16 visits over 57 years to Australia. She has had a long relationship with Australia. Australia has a new head of state. What will Charles be like as king? The New Zealanders note, from evolving colony to bicultural nation, Queen Elizabeth II walked a long road with Aotearoa, New Zealand. Another one, Queen Elizabeth dies, end of the new Elizabethan age. Yet another one, a moderniser who steered the British monarchy into the 21st century. There's going to be a lot of discussions, but I suppose she's a reminder, like President Gorbachev recently, of what times we've lived through, particularly if you're older than younger and on the planet. What are we going to make of it, Martin? And do you think it might hasten a transition in Australia to becoming a republic?
A lot of questions in there. And I would say it is a very seminal moment. How about we think about it like this? We've had the same head of state for 70 years in Australia. And that's a pretty profound thing to contemplate. So we're changing our head of state for our country for the first time in 70 years. That's quite a profound change. And look, it's if you think about the Republican debate here in Australia, there are merits and otherwise for the various parties around moving to a republic. But you can't really escape from people's personal perceptions of who's actually our head of state. And that's why the views of Elizabeth II have always been a part of the broader Republican debate, because that argument that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So if people have generally liked Elizabeth II, there's some people that will be less likely to support a republic. For me, it doesn't really matter who the monarch is. It's the principle. But I think actually you can't take a person out of a role. It's like our perception about whether our Prime Minister's role is the right one. It probably depends on what we think about the person in the role, same diff. What will be really interesting now for the Republican debate is how Charles III goes. If he similarly sort of manages to keep everyone on side and is seen as having a pleasant disposition. One of the things that Elizabeth II is said to have been very strong on is making a lot of different people feel at ease, whether she's meeting with British high society or she's meeting with Pacific leaders or if she's indeed meeting with Indigenous elders. A lot of them reported back with very positive experiences that she was a good listener, that she made them feel relaxed and comfortable in their presence, these sorts of things. There's a certain special skill set that comes with that. Whilst people have their views about the British monarchy, she seems to be fairly well acclaimed. Of course, there's always a few people with a different view. That's the nature of our pluralist society. She's been a fairly well-regarded monarch. The interesting thing about Charles is that he has always had a few of his own pet issues that he's interested in. One of them is the environment. So he's known to be passionate about that. And he's known to be passionate about things like organic farming and this, that, and the other. Does he park all of those now that he's the monarch? and play a very specific impartial line? Or does he use the very public platform and the many occasions he'll have to espouse some of those causes? That's a very interesting question. I think people are very conscious of their role, and he will be, but can he totally disassociate himself from those previous views? Because if he does start spouting political views, no matter what they are, he's going to upset some people.
A lot of his comments over time by people who are more conservative have been taken as a little political. As you've said, he's marked out the environment, architecture, some social causes, seemingly more progressive causes, as his point of difference, perhaps, from the rest of the members of the firm, or at least trying to mark himself out as a separate personality. I've wondered, I think there's no doubt, is there, that the passing of Queen Elizabeth II is going to herald a new debate about republicanism in Australia. And I have to say, already this morning, the calls are coming quick and fast. Adam Bandt, the leader of the Greens in the federal parliament, has just tweeted to us all, rest in peace, Queen Elizabeth II. Our thoughts are with her family and all who loved her. Now Australia must move forward. We need treaty with First Nations people, and we need to become a republic. So I suspect that sort of clarion call will come not just from the Greens, but all the people who wanted to see a republic last time around. Do you think it'll pick up at a pace, or will it just potter along? We have a minister for the republic, don't we?
We do. Matt Dissel-Thwaite is the minister minister assisting or something like that for a republic. I'm not, like, you'll get some discussion, Adam Bandt might be jumping the gun a little bit on the day that she's died and starting to talk about a republic. I think we might want to just let the dust settle a little bit on Elizabeth II's legacy first. But I think that you will see a renewed debate. There's a couple of things. Firstly, the federal government, even though Labor's platform supports a republic, is a really important other fish to fry. That it would see as certainly having a lot more precedence, such as a voice in the Constitution. And there's a lot around that. So I would be surprised that they want to really dive into the Republic issue at this time. And the second thing that's still around is that never-ending discussion around what model we would use and how that would be settled. So there's still a couple of impediments on the horizon to a Republic, but there's no doubt that over time, as the dust settles and Charles settles into his role eventually, that we'll have that discussion again. It's probably just a case of when.
Well, as you mentioned, Matt, Thistlethwaite is the assistant minister who's got this job. And back in early June, he said his principal role would be to educate the Australian people about the current constitutional arrangements and the English monarch as the head of state. And then he observed, as Queen Elizabeth comes to the twilight of her reign, it's a good opportunity for a serious discussion about what comes next for Australia. Well, that twilight has now just passed. He observes literally hundreds of Australians could perform the role, so why wouldn't we appoint an Australian as our pinnacle position under the Constitution? It will take time, but if you want to do it properly, we should begin the discussion now. So we're ready to go in a second term of an Albanese government. So I wonder if that second term concept, which was meant to be a statement to cause the horses not to get unduly restive and start trying to break out of the stables, will be brought forward.
I think a second term, if indeed they want to go pursue this, makes a lot more sense because Australians need to be convinced of change. Yeah, we often spout that statistic that only 8 of 44 referenda have ever got up in Australia, and the last one occurred when I was 1 year old, and that wasn't yesterday. So it's not an easy piece. And I think if you bundle a lot of different potential change and you're trying to explain a range of different issues at the same time, then you're going to run into hurdles. So on the Indigenous voice, there's a lot of work to do to explain to Australians that haven't been engaged in that process why it's important and why it needs to happen. So I think the Republican discussion right now, I understand obviously that with the monarch passing away, that's going to be a point in time. But having that right now while we're trying to discuss momentum for another referendum is going to be really difficult and perhaps messy. And I think that probably would be best differentiating out the two in terms of a timeline. So, we might be waiting another year or two before the actual referendum for the voice. And then we'd probably want to wait, give at least a year or two between, at minimum, between a discussion for another major constitutional change.
Certainly the points you make so well, I imagine will be debated and have people like the Assistant Minister scratching his head in a back room. You suddenly have this age-old concept of Australia being a republic that I can remember my grandmother back when I was at primary school talking about, a cherished view for many Australians. Coming together with the whole question of a treaty of Indigenous voice, you can see how there's a certain symmetry to it all and that they are related. But as you're suggesting, to roll them all into one might just be too complex. Is there an increased role, I suppose, for the Assistant Minister, but is it something that the PM's going to find himself just dragged into, whether he likes it or not? He's going to be asked consistently about what he thinks about going to be to a republic?
I think he'll throw a fairly consistent line in there and say that he supports the cause in principle, but he has other matters to prioritise, including the Indigenous voice. I reckon that's what you're going to get as a fairly consistent line coming out of Anthony Albanese. I can't see him wanting to open up another whole can of worms right at this point in time.
It's interesting, isn't it? I wonder what the general reaction to the idea that perhaps former prime ministers should form some sort of vanguard to generate the debate over the republic. Can you imagine Mr. Turnbull and Mr. Rudd, who have joined forces to take down the Murdoch Empire, advancing the republic cause?
There's no doubt that Mr. Turnbull and Mr. Rudd would jump into that particular role quite well. I mean, I think they both love being in the public eye, and they're not ready to roll over and disappear just yet. The problem they've got is it's more on the conservative side of politics. So Malcolm Turnbull might have been a former Liberal Party Prime Minister, but I don't know that a lot of conservatives, that he's really their flavour of the month. Obviously the two other obvious conservative, well, there's three, Morrison, Abbott and Howard, I very much doubt you'd be able to leverage any of those into that role. So, Turnbull doesn't bring the conservative, cohort with him anymore. I think he's just, he was a bit critical of the Morrison government, et cetera. And if you recall, there was a concerted push in the New South Wales Liberal Party to actually expel him. So I'm not sure that Malcolm Turnbull, and look, there's some blame, don't like shooting home all blame to one person, but there's some blame on Malcolm Turnbull for the failure of the Republic referendum in the first place, because he was the head of the Republican movement that put that case. And clearly, for whatever reason, I think mainly because there was a major split in Republican ranks that was never addressed, it failed. So, I'm not sure I'd be resurrecting Malcolm Turnbull to spearhead the next campaign.
Well, Matt, we'll bring this edition of View from the Roundhouse to an end. I think we've probably arrived at the position which many Australians enjoying their coffees and chats over the next few days will get to. They'll mourn in an appropriate way the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, an amazing reign, a woman who by all accounts was quite amazing in the ways that you described. Kevin Rudd, I think I saw a note, said he felt very nervous when he first met her. We're going to have films made about her. And historically, she's an astonishing figure. We have a new king, and people will debate what Charles is going to be like, and whether his training at Timbertop all those years ago was the making of the man, and whether we would actually like him to be our king, or whether we will transition in an orderly fashion along the lines you suggested to a republic about which there's still enormous sentiment in the country. So interesting times ahead. We'll come back next time to, yes, what is happening with treaty and what is happening with the voice. There's a lot of debate going on, including with some of the Indigenous leading politicians. But Martin, apart from all of that, the most momentous issue for Fremantle people this coming weekend on Saturday night is whether the Dockers will give the Collingwood Magpies their comeuppance at the G. Do you have a prediction?
I'm going to have a bold prediction. I think the Dockers can produce an upset here. They'll get a lot of confidence from last week, and I think they're ready to go. And a little birdie told me there could be a special guest in attendance. One of the members of the Politics by the Roundhouse Brigade might be there in person.
Oh, excellent. Excellent news. And I have to tell you Jero Robertson, Fremantle Shipping News' football scribe, apparently is going to be there. So keep an eye out late Saturday night for his report on the game. See you next week, Martin.
Fabulous. Great to talk as always.